Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who will never offer pizza to the guests that I am speaking to. I am Rob Cesarino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob's Podcast. It's the post-finale feedback show. And we are so excited. We're so blessed to have here with us such a talented podcaster, such a knowledgeable survivor expert. Of course, you could hear her every week as the co-host of the RHAP B&B. You could hear her on the Masked Singer Rehap Up, Drag Race Rehap Up, and more. Please welcome the great Liana Boris is here. Liana, how are you?
Doing fabulous. Thank you, Rob. So if you're not going to offer pizza, will you be offering champagne? And may I have any at any time that I would like?
So champagne, I think, is fine. Is like a little bit goes a long way. You know, you wouldn't want people that you were going to do a podcast with to be sloppy drunk. I feel like, a drink is good, like social drinking. I feel like can make for a fun podcast, but then there's probably a limit there. But yeah, nobody wants to hear the chewing.
No one wants to hear the chewing. No one wants to see the chewing. I am 100% on board with you in terms of having them eat pizza on the after show reunion, whatever you want to call it. I was so distracted because I didn't even care who was talking because Deshaun and Erica were just munching away. Of course, I would do the exact same thing, but it was, oh my gosh, so distracting. So no munching here.
To be fair, I didn't hear any chewing sounds of listening to the show. Although some people did tweet me, like, I can't tell if that's the fire or if that's people chewing. And so, yeah, I also got a message from, I got a lot of feedback on this take over the course of the week where Susie, one of the Rob's Podcast patrons, and she said to me, Rob, lighten up. Like, you're no fun. Pizza is great. People love to eat. You're just being, you just don't like when people, you don't like food. Like, no, I do like food. And pizza is great, but there are lots of bodily functions that are great that I don't need to see people doing.
Give me another context where people want to see other people eat. Hot dog eating competitions?
Well, look, there's a whole segment of, reality TV cooking shows, and you want to try the food.
But this isn't Chopped. It's not like they gave them a basket of four items and they had to make something in the fire.
People sent me tweets like, oh, Rob, you watch Seinfeld. They ate in a diner all the time. But really, Seinfeld, like, they're just like holding a coffee cup. Like, there was very little, like, somebody like eating a sandwich while they're talking. Wasn't for like comedic effect.
There were a few moments. There was a wide shot with Xander, I think, talking, and Erica and Deshaun just in the front going at the pizza. And then there would be some close ups where you could see like Shan behind Erica eating the pizza. It was distracting for me. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah. And look, I don't want to blame the players because these people starved for 26 days. I did say on Twitter that, look, I think that you could go 20 minutes without a slice of pizza. But they could have had a snack break. That's all I'm saying. Let Erica and Deshaun and Xander, have some pizza, recharge the battery a little bit. Like I understand you want to do the reunion show in Fiji. The reunion show didn't need to be literally 3 minutes after they counted the votes.
It was the way that they brought in the props right after the votes were read was like a stage scene change in a play. Mm-hmm. It was just immediately the giant Survivor 41 logo just gets pulled out. I saw a still that someone clipped on Reddit that was all of their faces, the final three's faces, and Deshaun is just like, so like, what the is going on? He just seems so upset about the whole thing. It was hilarious.
Yeah. So, all right. That we got off to a hot start talking about the pizza. More pizza talk to come. Liana, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. It's been super busy. Science has been off the charts with all of this, RNA work that's going on. But much like
not
Heather.
Robin Akiva.
Well, yes, that's true.
The other RNA.
The other RNA that we all know and love. Well, much like Heather, I never give up. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm in it. I'm fighting. But I think one thing, Rob, I meant to say this at the start of the show. I guess it is technically still the start of the show. Yeah. We need to tell people, if you're randomly tuning in, this is Survivor season 41, the finale feedback show.
Yes. Okay. So, all right. Since you brought it up and we're already talking about the pizza. Yeah. So towards the end of the show, Jeff comes back. He's like, all right, we're going to go to commercial and we'll come back. They come back from a commercial, and this is like late in the show. It's probably about like 10:50 on Wednesday night. And Jeff says this.
So if you're just tuning in randomly, this is Survivor, Survivor 41. We're doing our after show in the jungles of Fiji. I also just want to answer the question. If you're wondering, where do you get pizza? We make it. Stu made this. Really good, right? Yes.
Okay. So who is flipping through the channels? Like, oh, 10 minutes left of I missed the entire season of Survivor. No. We're 2 hours and 50 minutes into the finale. I'm going to jump in here and see what's happening. I've never seen Survivor before. What I've heard about it for the last 21 years. What is that? So, Jeff explains.
So if you're just tuning in randomly, this is Survivor, Survivor 41. We're doing our after show in the jungles of Fiji.
Okay, there was really no explanation of what this is. Just sort of you know, I mean, you could see it when you switch to the channel. Like, it will say literally Survivor on the top of the screen. And then also that anybody tuning in is like, wait, Survivor? How do they have pizza?
Yeah, exactly. I love that is the top. And I'm sure you're all wondering, like, the most burning question that anyone would ever ask. The location and who made the pizza.
Yeah, where do they get pizza from on Survivor? It's like, oh, well, we have a guy, Stu. Stu makes the pizza. And Liana, after all the Stu talk, after all the carrots and the onions and the warm broth and the hearty potatoes, the person that makes the pizza is Stu?
Maybe it's ironic, you know, like, you know, you call kind of like a taller, bigger guy, like, you know, Little Johnny, right? It's that kind of thing. So that's a nickname. They call him Stu. Mm-hmm. But do you think Stu made the stew? Mm-hmm. Or do you think it was someone else with a different name? What if it was like Reuben that made the stew?
Yeah.
And that's a whole cycle.
Yeah. You know what? I feel like that maybe, you know, people aren't talking about how great Stu is.
By the way, Jeff, you undersold the hell out of that.
Undersold the hell out of that of Stu.
Stu. Was he talking about Stu or Stu? Like the Stu or Stu the person? Because, you know, Xander, big fan of Stu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I wish we could have gotten a shot of Stu.
I do feel like that was warranted. Yes. If you're going to shout out the person responsible for the pizza, you were taking the time to interrupt the after show to bring this up. You know, he deserves some facial recognition.
Yeah. I mean, that is Stu a person on the staff? Is like, is Stu cook everything, or is Stu just like Stu had a pizzeria on Staten Island. They recruited him, like, come out to Fiji. You're going to be our Survivor pizza maker.
Okay, here's what I'm thinking.
As they're a pizza going maker.
Through. Okay, so as a pizza maker, I just really feel like, okay, you're there. You're talking budget cuts. You're like, look, we got to trim the fat a little bit. So what can we do? Well, we've hired this guy to only make pizza. No. Got to keep him. How about we cut down the season to shorten the days? That is where we're going to cut. Yeah, no, makes sense. The logic is clear.
Okay. All right. So excited about Stu. And if you're just joining us, we're this is Rob as a podcast. We're answering questions. Okay. This is Liana. Right, she hosts the B&B.
No, that's too much information. And if you're wondering, I don't know. Oh my gosh, what is so stupid that people would want to know? Mm-hmm. If you're not wondering why Rob has two different colored lights in his background.
I don't know.
Yeah. Most burning question of all.
Yeah. Stu set it up this way. Okay. So Liana, we should talk about all the feedback questions we got from Survivor 41. Of course, in addition, we had our Survivor Know-It-Alls. We had the exit interviews with the Final Five. Did you get a chance to listen to the Final Five?
I did. Yes, I really enjoyed that. I thought it was fun that you got to talk to all of them. I hope that you get more time in the future. You know, Xander, what he thought it was 40 minutes. So maybe.
Yeah, told Xander that it was 40 minutes?
This is amazing social reads. It's Stu's fault, of course.
Yes, so that goes back to Xander has sort of the wrong read on everything that somebody told him the wrong thing.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Well, we can get into it, but Xander had the wrong read on the rain. Okay, he's like, oh, it's just one little cloud. No.
Yeah, I would love to get the chance to talk to all of them. I'm hard at work trying to bring some more interviews your way. But just in the real time of doing those, it was a little stressful for me. I'm not sure if the other people that did the exit press had it the same way. But so I had, I have each person for 15 minutes, but my calls were all stacked up 10:45, 11, 11:15, 11:30, 11:45. And so sometimes like somebody is like might be a couple minutes late or they're still talking and the next person is calling. And so this happened like with Big Brother also, where it's like a little tricky of, you don't want to sort of like run people off, but it's also sometimes like, I'm going to miss the next call.
Yeah, like, oh, I know you gotta get going, but I think you handle it quite well because it didn't come across that way in the interviews at all.
Okay. All right, so final five interviews. And then I talked with Michelle Fitzgerald on Thursday night, which was great that Michelle had time to talk about how she looked at Erica's win and Erica's games. That's a very fun interview with Michelle Fitzgerald up on robiswebsite.com. This weekend, Liana, you're doing double duty because there's still a B&B to come. Chappelle is going to join you and Mike.
That's right. We're going full circle, right? I believe you started with Chappelle. Yes. We are ending with Chappelle. We have all of our predictions to read for the final five. So that's going to be a lot. And then we've got some fun games that are in the works. So I think it's going to be a great time.
Has Chappelle been back on the B&B since Big Brother 21, where we had the Denis?
Oh, Denis. I don't remember when he was on. I don't think so. I think this might be his first time back. So yes, I think it's going to be a
must
mess.
Listen. Yeah. Plus all of the other Survivor Global, Why Erica Won, Terrence Stockwatch with Asia Welch, plus Purple Pants podcast coming your way. So lots of Survivor wall-to-wall coverage. But I want to start with, way back in September, we had our draft. Don't forget the wand off is coming back on Tuesday night. So get your wand offs in, micro wand offs, holiday wand offs, send them into wandoff@robinsonwebsite.com for Tuesday night. All right. So Liana, we got together back in September, the Sunday before the season started, and we had the Survivor 41 draft, and it was you, your partner Puya, it was Chappelle, it was Asia, all people that are on the podcast this week.
Oh yeah.
Shannon Gus and Taryn Armstrong. So we'll get to hear from all of the drafters this week on Rob is a Podcast. Leona, who did you end up on your draft team?
So I had my first pick was Shan. And I was the last one to pick. So I picked Shan and then Liana as my first two picks. And then when it came back around to me, I picked Tiffany. So I had Shan, Liana, and Tiffany.
Shan, Liana, and Tiffany. Okay. So, everybody made the merge.
Yes, I think I was maybe the last person to lose someone, and then I promptly lost all of my players pretty much back to back to back.
So let me just ask, so what was the mood at your house on Wednesday night as Puya, who famously had a draft team of Deshaun and Abraham and Sarah. And the late wrinkle was, if you have the first boot, that you could not win, even if you had the winner. And so there was a chance that Puya was double grenaded in the premiere, but then might have had the winner and would have been DQ'd.
Yeah. I mean, look, Deshaun got a lot of visibility throughout the season. And so we both thought, oh my God, is this actually going to happen? Is there a possibility that Puya will be able to make RHAP draft history with the first two grenades and then the winner? But it was, and I could see the look on his face during the final tribal council when people are starting to lay into Deshaun, and Ricard, after one of Deshaun's answers, goes, I'd like to challenge that or something along those lines. And Puya just so crestfallen as he realized that it would be impossible for him to win.
Yes. Okay. So I wasn't sure if it was relief or it was sort of like a what might have been.
That first night, the first episode was that was the heartbreak. And so it was pretty much, it was only uphill from there. Yeah. So I think he was cautiously optimistic, but unfortunately it wasn't meant to be.
Okay. So, we had our draft and it turns out that the winner of the draft happened to be, Taryn Armstrong, who, you know, has won his share of the Big Brother drafts over the years. And so I had sort of forgotten about this stipulation, but I guess Taryn did not, because he took to Twitter and he shared this clip with us. And so let me go ahead and play the audio of this for you that you can see. This is from draft night. Here we all are back from mid-September. And here's a stipulation that was added.
I had suggested also that the winner gets a cameo from any player on their team.
In favor.
I'm in favor too. I'm with Liana.
What if they don't go on cameo? Can you imagine?
I mean, come on.
Can you imagine if they didn't
go on cameo? What a silly thing to say.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's what we're playing for.
Okay. Yeah. Could you imagine if they didn't go on cameo, Liana?
Come on.
Yeah. Silly thing to say. Okay. So right. Taryn tweeted that clip out along with the link to Erica's cameo. And he said, just leaving this here for @RobSestrini, you know, #RHAP, #Survivor. I appreciated the reminder because that, Akiva and I probably owe you several cameos, right?
I think so. I've lost count at this point, but you know, I applaud Taryn for coming through on here.
Yes. And Taryn's strategy famously was he was not afraid of the grenade.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a t-shirt. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, not afraid of the grenade. I think that's from the Jersey Shore, right?
Yeah, he ain't afraid of the grenade. He also had Voce in Sydney. Who Voce with a grenade potential, but actually, not grenade-y at all. I think they just ran into a buzzsaw in the season. But so, all right. So Taryn did send me the reminder. So I got right to work on Thursday and I deployed the cameo request to the winner of Survivor 41. And at this hour, I can tell you, we do have a response. So, for Taryn Armstrong, here comes your long distance dedication from the winner of Survivor 41. Here's Erica.
Hi, Taryn. Rob asked me to reach out to you, and I'm honestly so happy to talk to you, and here's why. I'm normally a big podcast fan, but this season I didn't listen to any of the Survivor podcasts. Sorry, just because I needed to, you know, preserve my mental health. But a lot of people.
Liana, I like that our first Canadian winner has included a sorry in her cameo to Taryn.
Exactly.
No need to apologize, Erica. Money. You do you. Okay. Protect your peace. Okay.
People told me that I needed to listen to the RHAP draft episode. And I loved seeing that you were not afraid of the grenades like some people. You decided to just go for it and picked me because you liked me. Even though, I don't know, who knows, I could have been a first boot. So congratulations, because you obviously did the right thing. I think everybody needs to take some notes here. But I don't know if anybody can really be surprised, because there's nothing that screams boldness, decisiveness, or potential winner more than a man who loves eating plain yogurt. You don't have time for the fruit. You don't have time for the honey or any of that extra stuff. You just need that straight up dairy. Enjoy the crown. You are the reigning champ of the RHAP Survivor Draft. Own it. And you better be bold enough to pick the winner in 42. Congratulations.
Okay.
Hi.
Yeah. Wow. That's so funny. This is a woman that knows how to cameo.
I love that. And again, right on the money. All the greatest leaders in history have all eaten plain yogurt. Teddy Roosevelt, you know, George Washington, mm-hmm. Just a sign of decisiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So kudos to Taryn, and thank you to Erica for knocking out that cameo. And I think that, as you can see, this is somebody who understands the assignment and is definitely worthy of your cameo purchases.
Mm-hmm. And as Mike Bloom and I were talking, you can get a cameo gift card. So if you are looking for the perfect holiday gift for someone, you don't even have to get them a cameo. You can get them a cameo gift card. Yeah. So,
Liana, though, in the many different multiverses of different hourglasses being broken, which Survivor 41 contestant do you think would have potentially been maybe as much fun to get a cameo from?
Oh, man, that's tough. Because I think Erica has, even in the cameo, she comes across, oh, I'm so sorry, and then hits you with the plain yogurt jab. Mm-hmm. That's brilliant. I feel like another person who could be really entertaining is Xander. Maybe it was just this finale where he was kind of going a little, you know, cuckoo pants here, being like, I'll just eat my own adrenaline.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretending that he's in a rock band. Maybe you can channel some of that energy in a cameo from him.
Yeah, I think Tiffany also, I think, mm-hmm. is going to give you a pretty good cameo. Sydney, not sure if she's on there. That might be a walk on the wild side as well.
I feel that Brad's, for some reason, could be very chaotic. I feel it'd be filmed upside down, perhaps, or there could be some other very interesting things. You could see the ranch, which would be, you know, wonderful.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good options from this cast.
Okay. So, again, congratulations to Taryn for the win in the Survivor 41 draft. All right. I guess we should get to some of the feedback questions that we had for the season. And so why don't we go ahead and let's talk about, I guess, should we, let's go to talking about the final tribal council. And so we have a question that has come in from Australian Nathan has a question about the final tribal council format, and did you notice any changes here?
Hi, Rob and Liana. It's Australian Nathan from Melbourne. One thing that I feel like hasn't come up yet is that the tribal council was almost like a new format. There wasn't the, this is the outwit portion, now discuss. It was people asking questions with the opportunity for people to interject. And also, those questions did get asked to every person as well, which I think worked really well. I know in South Africa this year they filmed both versions and decided to go with the individual questions. But I think this really worked really well. Love to hear your thoughts.
Now, we haven't talked too much yet on the podcast about the modification to the Final Tribal Council format. How are you feeling it?
Well, first, did we know this? And I just like completely missed it, that there was going to be some changes to the Final Tribal Council.
No, it was a subtle change. I mean, that they did not structure it where really it had been since season 34 that they've done like, all right, now it's the outwit portion.
Right.
Now. But okay. It was like nobody really understood what was what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it also felt like those cutoffs were arbitrary, mm-hmm. not reductive, just arbitrary, because it was like, well, what do you put under outplay? What do you put under outlast? And it never really felt like the questions that people were asking even made sense necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, not that the categories made sense. So it just felt much more fluid to be able to have a discussion without having to break it down into, you know, three different quarters.
Yeah, the three different quarters of Survivor.
Yeah, so, classic three quarters.
Yes. So I don't know necessarily if this was like, did production make this change, or was this the byproduct of a smaller jury of 8 as opposed to juries of as many as 13 as we've seen in some of the recent seasons? Or if this was just like a group that really like understood the assignment and, you know, sort of
Evie sort of stepped up, and even though that Tiffany was the mayor of Ponderosa, it seemed to me more like Evie was sort of like the foreperson of the jury, and maybe it was like a little bit more organized in terms of how the jury was going to approach things.
I guess did they know? I mean, I like it when it's a fluid conversation so that the jury can respond, as long as they don't then take it upon themselves to take up all of the time talking, right? It still needs to be about the people who are sitting in the final three. But to allow them to just interject and say, okay, well, in response to your answer, then I have a follow-up question. And I thought that format really worked. I don't know if they all had to decide questions beforehand and then they kind of went around the horn, or it was very fluid and they all could just participate. Because it didn't feel awkward at all to me. No. It just felt very natural, very fluid.
It seemed like that the jury sort of set it up where it was that they first, I think they let I'm not sure if Deshaun or Xander went first, but it's something that they said, like, okay, we are going to spend some time talking about each person's game, as opposed to, you know, in some of these seasons, my biggest complaint is that I feel like that we get into like a pile on situation,
right,
where there's one person, either the jury says, look, we're not even going to talk to you, or, you know, they like, what did you even do, where, you know, they're going to like all like talk at Nora at once, and she's going to like have to like walk off and cry because she's so upset because everybody is just like, piling on and, being super like hard on one person, and like 10 people are all saying things at the same time. So this seemed like everybody really had a chance to be able to articulate what they did.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was evident. So, you know, Evie does the introduction. Thank you all for being here. Yeah, one of the toughest seasons, which I'm happy that they said one of the toughest seasons, because I know there's a lot of debate about what is the toughest season. But then
tough
Danny
as
has tough as, I mean, dirty hands up in this game. I don't know.
That's good.
Such a savage answer. I don't know. All right. So I felt like Danny's question was very big, very broad. Essentially, give me a summary of your game throughout the different phases of the game, the pre-merge, the post-merge, and the final eight, which I didn't know if those were official demarcations of the different phases, or, you know, Danny says the quarters, the three
seemed
quarters.
A little arbitrary. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why final eight. What happened maybe that's how they defined it for their season? Because what was the final eight? Was that after Shan went out?
I think that Shan did go out at the final eight. I think you probably could like do that exercise. Like, I think in a normal season, I think that maybe if you were going to do like the four quarters of Survivor in a normal season of Survivor, I think you'd say like, okay, the start of the game until the swap. The swap until the merge,
right.
The merge until, say, like, I'd say like the family visit, and then like the family visit to the end. I think that would probably would be, but, you know, in the 26 day season, maybe there is not that necessarily like artificial line of demarcation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I was curious why that's what he chose. Pre-merge, post-merge, obviously it makes sense, but then they do go through. So Xander is given a chance to answer. Deshaun is given a chance to answer. And even when, you know, Ricard kind of jumps in there, Danny makes sure to go back to Erica. He says, no, I still want to get to Erica. So they really gave each person an opportunity to explain holistically their game. Although, you know, it was, they were able to break it down into the different periods, quarters. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pounds, you know, whatever.
Leanna, something that I was thinking about with Erica's game, where that I feel like that what is, you know, and Erica wins by a wide margin, like a really like dominant win, 7-1. I think that one of the things that really stands out about Erica is that she is like such a an underdog, where I almost feel like that the way that she really represents the underdog, I feel like that every single person, I think every single person in feels like they are the underdog. And because that Erica really does such a great job like representing the underdog, I think that every single person could look at Erica and relate to her. And we saw that from Danny, that you would think that Danny would not feel at all relatable to Erica's game.
And Erica says, you know, hey, that, or Danny says, like, Erica, you were the underdog. You played the game that I wish I could have played. Xander, when I talked to him, I said, would you vote for, Erica or Deshaun? And he said that he would have voted for Erica because he liked that she was the underdog. I looked at Erica. I was like, oh, I love Erica because I feel like, you know, she's the underdog. I guess it's like the Big Brother. We love the underdog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no undercats here, just underdogs. I think that that's a really interesting point because it wasn't just Danny also. It was when Danny said the thing about, oh, you played the game I wish I could have. Tiffany agreed. I think Evie agreed. You could see the jury nodding along. Yes. So maybe it is that where they envision themselves as like they envision themselves as that person, or it's just because she best exemplified the underdog. Because I think you could make the same argument as like, well, Xander was the underdog. You know, why didn't he get that same level of respect? Because theoretically, if he's the one on the outs from the beginning, you know, it's him and the old Yasa.
Yeah.
Like, why doesn't he come across that way?
Well, I think that, so I think this may be like a psychological thing that I think that internally, every single person feels like that they are an underdog because every person like sort of like understands the individual struggles that they have. But that I think that the issue was that I don't know how many people looked at Xander and said, he is an underdog. Xander probably felt like, okay, and he definitely did feel like he was an underdog, but people said, well, you're strong. You have an idol. You have these advantages in the game. You weren't an underdog, that we don't want to work with you because you have all these things. And I think that Xander could feel that way, that like, well, I am an underdog because nobody wants to work with me or people are out to get me because I have these things. But I think that Erica, I think that people could look at her and her game and her position, and it was easy to see that the story that she's an underdog.
Mm-hmm. And I think also she talked about this in her final tribal council where she says, I walk into boardrooms and people think I'm the intern, right? So she even has the look because she's what, 5 foot nothing. She's super tiny. So she just also kind of physically looks like she would be the underdog, especially in a game that requires strength for some of these challenges. And she was able to win 2 individual immunities. And I think that that really says something. I love this theory. I would say for me, why I think Erica was able to be so successful is because she accurately portrayed her abilities within the game. So if you have someone coming to Final Tribal Council and being like, I played the greatest game, I did all of these things, but that is too distant from the truth, you look at that and you just go, no, you didn't. Shut up. And I felt like Erica with the, oh, having a strong social game is knowing where you stand and what you're capable of. She just was able to set the expectation at exactly the right level. Whereas when people were coming back at Xander or coming back at Deshaun, it was because they were overclaiming their abilities or overstating what they had accomplished in the game.
Mm-hmm. Also, I believe Erica voted correctly every single vote in the game. She doesn't go to tribal council before the merge, but then once she gets to the merge, she votes correctly every single time out. And so I don't think anybody else can claim that in the season. So, I mean, I don't even think she mentioned that in her final tribal council, but I mean, it was another thing that, you know, she was just on point. She knew where, mm-hmm. you know, the game was every single time out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that ability to have that awareness and to be in the know, even if you're not exactly in the power position, I think that's something that's really impressive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the edit of Erica. And, you know, there's been so much talk about this, and I want to get your take on this. So here's a question that comes to us from Joey. Joey wants to talk about the edit.
Hi, Rob. Joey from Omaha here. I wanted to ask you about the story that Survivor told to us of Erica's win, or her winner's edit. Personally, I would strongly prefer the way Erica was presented to us, where I feel that we could see why she won, but it wasn't so obvious throughout the whole game that she was going to win. I'm glad they didn't put random confessionals of her in the pre-merge to keep her front of mind, front and center. like they did with other contestants over the years, like a Tommy, like a Sarah, who were pigeonholed into their winner's edit. So what do you think of the winner's edit compared to some of the more obvious ones? Would you rather have a more obvious, thorough story, or would you rather have a little bit of a surprise?
Okay. I think that this is a fascinating thing to talk about, because I feel like that for me as a, you know, podcaster that's like talking about the season and, you know, so much, you know, so many podcasts a week, that this was such a fun ride to, you know, go into the finale, and really nobody knew who was going to win the season. And while, you know, Erica was certainly under edited, especially in the first half of the game, that, you know, it's not like that we're sitting here scratching our heads like, wait, I don't even understand how did Erica win the game? Like she wasn't even there. So this was, you know, as we've had the whole season play out, Liana, I thought this was a very fun ride.
It's definitely interesting, because if you think about Survivor, is there are the super casuals who, you know, are checking in every week. Maybe they miss an episode or two, and they need, or like they, there's a specific goal that you can have when you're catering to that type of audience. Or you can have the people who are doing the edit charts. They are digging deep, as Jeff would love to say, into everyone's edit. And to create a narrative for those two very different audiences, that is very challenging, because on one hand, I can understand why Survivor would want to have that over-editedness, right? Having to, you know, to use the language from Joey's question, the pigeonholing, if you will, to have a confessional to continue to show even the casual audience or people who maybe aren't spending hours and hours dissecting the content. Oh yeah, this person, I remember this person. So then by the time it gets to the end of the show, they don't feel like the rug has been pulled out from underneath them. That it's like, wait, I'm sorry, who? But we who have been talking about this for, you know, so much time, so much energy of, you know, we can understand it. And for us, it can be a wild ride, but for a different type of audience, I can see how that would be frustrating.
And to speak to like the casual audience, that I wonder, you know, the way that they put together the Erica goes to Exile Island and then smashes the hourglass. And, you know, it's sort of like in hindsight, if we rewatch the season, I think that, you know, this is now like the winner of the season does this big twist that turns out to be like a cliffhanger. And obviously they didn't know she was going to win the season at the time that Jeff tells us it's going to be a 2-hour episode before they even go into the tribal council to pull the rocks. But I do feel like that was like a really big moment in the season. That was sort of like, Erica, you know, presented as Erica's move. And so like, I feel like that we kind of have forgotten about that was like such a big deal that they like hung a whole episode on Erica's decision.
Mm-hmm. I think for that specifically, I remember at the time, it wasn't even about Erica in that moment. It was just about the twist itself. To me at that moment, it didn't matter who was there. It could have been Danny. It could have been Nasir. It could have been Heather. It could have been anybody that was there. And I felt like the conversation, at least from my perspective, would have been about the twist itself. But now I think in retrospect, looking back, of course it is about Erica. It's about her tale on Exile Island. It is about her decision, even though to us it's like, well, of course she's going to be immune. So of course she's going to smash it. Doesn't matter who is there. But then that is what catalyzes the rest of her edit throughout the season, because this is the turning point. It's where at camp in that first part of the episode, the pre-cliffhanger, they're talking about, oh yeah, okay, so it's a done deal. Whenever Erica gets back, we're going to vote her out. And then you have literally a game-changing twist that she's able to capitalize on to flip everything around and then jump back into the season and make it all the way to the end.
And she says when she comes back from Exile Island, she says, you know, I'm going to go from, you know, I was the lamb. I'm going to come back as the lion. Mm-hmm. And I think that probably like on a rewatch, I think that's probably some of that stuff is like a little bit more rewarding as you see like she's sort of like coming back with a purpose into the game from the Exile Island.
Mm-hmm. And I remember even before that, just to take a step back, when they're talking about Luvu's talking about throwing the challenge to vote out Erica, but it felt like it was all from Deshaun's perspective. So to me, I was like, oh, okay, I'm supposed to understand this from Deshaun's perspective, and Erica is maybe less important here. But we are hearing multiple times that Erica is this threat. And then to have her breakout moment, it felt like with the whole hourglass twist, I think that was sort of the start that puts everything in motion. But didn't she have some quiet episodes even post merge?
I have to go back and take a look in terms of like which ones they were. If there were any quiet episodes, I think that it might have been maybe the Tiffany vote. I think that might have been the one where I think that her and Heather, I think that they were not like really featured as part of it. I know that they had sort of like some conversations with Deshaun in that episode, and then Heather mm-hmm. at the live tribal council. But I think that then really, if you go through the rest of the votes, after that vote was then after Tiffany went out, was sort of like the split vote where you definitely have Erica with the vote against Nasir. She wins immunity in that episode. Then the one after that is the voting out Shan, where mm-hmm. she's playing a part in like splitting the votes at the last minute. Then the next episode was the final seven, where she plays a part in, you know, she's the swing vote between voting out Liana or voting out Ricard. And then at the final six, obviously, with being involved with deciding between Danny and Deshaun. So I think that really, like, right after she comes back from Exile Island, she does not have a ton of agency in terms of what's happening with the vote. But then once they end up voting out Nasir, I think that really starts to change, because she forms that alliance with herself and Heather and Ricard and Xander.
If I remember correctly from that Tiffany vote out, I remember seeing the, because that was the Heather tribal council intensity, which I'm super happy that you asked her about that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, in the exit interview. So I remember seeing Erica in the huddle with everybody else. It's like, oh, she has somehow been able to be the person that was for sure getting voted out to then at least somewhat reintegrating within the majority group. And then, like you said, I think from there, it was then flipping that underdog status into the power position to sort of dismantle, take out Shan. And then her and Heather were the swing votes from essentially final seven on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's sort of the Erica side of things. And just to answer Joey's question, would you prefer a season where, Erica, gets more, but maybe it might make it more of a foregone conclusion that she's going to win?
I liked the mystery personally, although I think that then it sets her up. And I think you talked about this with Michelle a little bit. Is she going to have to be constantly defending her win of justifying why did I win? Why, because that feels unfortunate and an undue burden on her, because I still think that it needs to be a cohesive enough narrative that it's not so. I don't know, because I feel like there's so many people out there that think that Xander deserved to win and Xander should win, and that Xander. So then I feel like the editors are doing her a disservice. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're just doing her a disservice by setting up the edit that way. Right. So while I would want to be surprised, I feel bad for her.
Yes. So I feel like that the answer is probably a mixture of the both, where I think that you probably want to give Erica a little bit more than she got in the edit. But I think that probably the key to doing this is to build up like multiple potential winners where and I think like we kind of had that with Ricard and Deshaun and Xander. And I feel like that people were making the case for Erica, where we did come into this finale where we had probably four viable winners. But I think that the more, and of course, Shan had such a big edit in the season where people felt like, oh no, Shan is definitely the one getting the winner's edit. I think the more viable winners you build up, I think that makes for the better season. Just the challenge there is then it sort of like hurts your ability to sort of like serve everybody. And so we saw that with Heather in the season, where it's hard to like build up everybody into a potential winner of the game, but then also like give everybody enough to sort of make them three-dimensional characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just not enough time
in 42 minutes
To do that. I think if you could maybe do it as pairs. So if Erica and Heather as a pair could have gotten sort of a narrative story, it's like a two for one deal.
I think that was kind of it.
Okay. Well, yeah, eventually.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned Xander. That we have a question about Xander and Xander's edit. This is a question from Sanya.
Hi, Rob and Liana. So it seems to me that Xander is one of the most positively edited Zero Vote finalists, at least in recent memory. He didn't really get a winner's edit by Edic standards, but the edit also didn't really show his poor reads on the other players until the end of the finale. We know from paying close attention and exit press that Xander was a bit of a goat by the middle of the post-merge, but the show itself never communicated that. Now, I enjoy not having an obvious winner, and I think that Xander seems like a wonderful person and subverts his archetype really well. At the same time, the show did not accurately communicate to us why he lost, which I find particularly frustrating in a season where social issues were a focus. I've seen a lot of people say that Xander was robbed and shut out just because he was a young white guy with a woke jury, which obviously is not true. People would have said that regardless of the edit, but I do think the fact that the show did not directly tell us why Xander's game wasn't respected, in addition to the Erica disappointingly low visibility edit, contributes to that incorrect mentality by leaving more room for ascribing his loss to identity instead of gameplay. It's amazing that the show is talking about marginalization, but that is undermined by them refusing to make clear the flaws in the game of the only cishet white man who made it far this season, especially comparing Xander's edit with Deshaun's edit. What do you think? Does the show not know how to edit their golden boy when he's not a jury threat? And do you think that that has greater social ramifications, or is this a stretch? Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to you for all the joy you bring to my life, and I'm excited to hear what you have to say. Have a great day.
Okay, thank you. That was a really great and well-worded question, which just to go back to Xander, where first off, I just want to add that I think that Xander, as a, especially as a 20-year-old guy that I think has been just, you heard the other players, while they talked about his reads were not really great, that maybe they felt like that he did not come off as like, you know, super authentic, you know, all the time with them. And, you know, it's hard to really give a lot of respect to somebody who is so much younger than some of the players on the season. You know, you heard Danny talk about how that he looked at Xander as an ally, and, you know, all the players have, you know, spoken highly about Xander and, you know, like how much they think of him. This is very, very interesting, Liana, in terms of the way that the show portrayed Xander, really without any flaws in terms of how the other players saw him in the game.
Okay. I love this question. I think that there's a lot of interesting things to get into. So the first thing that I am going to talk about that I would like to talk about is that the show didn't show Xander screwing up. To me, the first indication of that was the Tiffany interaction, where he's telling Tiffany, hey, guess what? I got this secret advantage. Tiffany already knows. Tiffany is rolling her eyes to the high heavens about everything that Xander's doing. And while he didn't get the blatant, obvious Dodo music, I think that that was a very great example of how Xander misread the situation and then was super awkward with his answer in response to Tiffany poking him a little bit about the fact that he had lied to her. So that to me is the first indication. And I think that there are also examples of it throughout the season, except for the Liana idol inner, like the, oh, can I have your fake idol? You know, idol, no, you can have this fake one, because the extra vote that he had, he didn't use correctly, I would say. He used it in a place where it was probably not necessary to use. He could have saved Evie if he wanted to. He was putting a lot of faith in Deshaun, which didn't end up panning out. And even though he's telling us, I am in power and I am now the one that's taking charge, it was just him telling me that,
yeah,
which doesn't actually mean anything to me because everyone's the hero of their own narrative.
I really struggled with figuring out Xander's position throughout the game, because that I felt like that we saw so much of Xander telling us about how Xander was doing, and he was, and nobody was talking, like he wasn't getting like the Dodo edit, like, you know, if Coach is telling us one thing and then somebody's like, who is this jackass? You know, he wasn't getting sort of like the like silly Dodo music when he was saying these things. So I was taking the edit at face value when Xander talks about how he is going to, you know, that like, oh, the Shan blindside, that was his move. And when he really wasn't even like featured in the episode, he was part of it, but it didn't seem like it was his move. But then he told us it was his move in the next episode, even more so than, you know, when we heard from Ricard, who really only talked about it from Deshaun's perspective in terms of how he didn't think much of Deshaun as a player after that move had happened. I was like, well, it really feels like that Xander is like, there's a lot of focus on Xander. One of the episodes ended with, after Xander didn't play his idol, the jury is like, and Xander still has his idol. When Liana you know, had the famous moment where she talked about her the $1 million mistake. I guess it was $1 million mistake for her, but it wasn't necessarily that Xander was going to be the person to go on to get that $1 million after not voting out Xander. There was a lot of focus on Xander throughout the season, and maybe the show was like, hey, we're really going to build up Xander to sort of like obfuscate that Erica is going to win.
Well, that's okay. So that's the other thing, is that I think that there were indications, to me, there were indications of the Dodo-ness, although it was not overt. And I think it wasn't overt because exactly what you're saying, which is they need someone who is going to seem be the other viable winner candidate. It seems like the show had made the decision that Deshaun was going to be the person that they were going to throw a little bit more under the bus. You know, Ricard had a confessional talking about, you know, a couple episodes before the finale about how Deshaun is all over the place. And that to me is more of that Dodo edit for Deshaun. And so then Xander by necessity had to be the other one who was going to challenge Erica in the final tribal council. And then apparently they just made the decision to throw all of that under the bus because of Xander's, one, the decision to take Erica, and then two, the final tribal council. It just felt like there was nothing else that they could do for poor little Xander. They were like, sorry, it's time for everyone to know that no one has the most respect for your game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I personally think it had more to do with Xander's age of being 20 years old. And again, I wasn't on the jury. You know, I wasn't there. I don't think that it was necessarily that, you know, it was a woke jury that wasn't going to vote for Xander, because it seemed like that from what we heard about them, that, you know, that there did not seem to be a person that Xander had an issue with along the way. It seemed like that they all seem to, you know, enjoy his company. But I just get the sense that the biggest hurdle for him to overcome was that he was 20 and everybody else was, other than Liana, everybody else was, you know, 26, 29, you know, 30s. I forget what was the terminology that Evie used to describe Tiffany and Heather?
On the other
end of the spectrum.
It was later days.
Later days.
Oh my God. When Jeff was like, later days wants to say something, I lost it. Sorry, not to derail the conversation. But anyway, yes. Okay. So you're saying that you think that it's a product of his age of why he was perceived this way by the
I really think so. And Xander, like in talking with him and watching him all season, I feel like that, you know, he, you know, speaks for the most part where, and he, I think he, can be jokey, but I think he speaks with like, often like a self-seriousness. And I feel like that if you were going to come in and play the game as a 20-year-old, I think that people want to see you like a little bit more as like a passenger, as opposed to trying to, you know, carve out your own thing. You know what I mean?
A pilot, if you will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you are sort of a wing person. I think that Xander even spoke to this about how that, you know, he felt like that people were looking at him as potentially like an Aussie, and he was trying to, you know, diminish his threat level. But I think that you probably, like, I think that Liana's approach was probably better, where, you know, she seemed like a little bit more of like a wing person to Evie, and then later to Shan, where I feel like that for Xander, like, I don't think that people saw him that way.
Yes. So, okay. So to me, there's two things that I'm thinking about. One is how Xander was perceived by the other players. So that's like a whole story. That's a whole narrative. That's sort of the actual events that happened. Then on the flip side, there's what we as the audience sees. And so I think what this question is kind of getting at is like, what information is transferred from the reality of what happened and the reality of how Xander is being perceived to sort of the narrative of how Xander is perceived and the narrative that we as the audience are being told how Xander is perceived. And I think that that's where the disconnect is coming into play, because I think what you're talking about is very much, very much on point, and it's very much how Xander was perceived by the other players. But then to the question, well, but the audience sees it as wokeness. And that actually has nothing to do with how the players perceived or how the jury perceives. It's how the editors are telling that story to the viewers of the show. And that's sort of where that wokeness kind of comes from. And so because Xander is never shown to have flaws, if we say that he's never shown to have flaws, then it comes across that why Erica lost.
He said he likes stew. What more do you need to see, people?
Oh my God, Rob, that was it. That was the editing tip that should have given us why Xander lost. It was when he was all in on stew and then called Xander candy with the whole chicken broccoli reward. Yeah. We should have known all along.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You were making a very good point. And
no, that's the food thing is definitely more important. But anyway, so that's where I think it's tough, because it makes me think of, oh, there's these systemic biases about how you're going to edit this type of person. And then we, you know, as the viewers, as society, we have also systemic biases that are the way we perceive something. And so you have to almost over edit Erica and under edit Xander to combat those types of unconscious biases.
Yeah, I feel like that for the Survivor viewer, like I wonder if somebody who never watched and Liana, I know this, you're from science. I feel like that maybe you could work on doing this experiment. If we found like, 100 people who never saw Survivor before and showed them this season, would they feel the same way about Survivor as somebody who has been watching the whole way through and is sort of like grown up on getting their dose of like, the favorable edit of the Ozzy, the Malcolm, the Joe, like that sort of like a lineage of sort of like the, long hair athletic guy who, is a bit of a provider. Although I don't think we really saw Xander doing too much in terms of the providing, but sort of like, fitting in, even Spencer, like the young, early 20s guy, Michael Yerger, like that guy has always been, a prominent part of Survivor. And so I'm not sure if maybe like for the editors, like if they lean on that in terms of like, okay, well, look, we got to give the people what they want. This is, you got a Xander, you got to give them the Xander. Or if for the viewers are just trained to feel that way about this character.
Oh, that's actually really interesting as well. Is it that the editors are executing the same program and then they're just sort of doing it in the way that they're used to doing it? Or, and we can even say this, I mean, for anyone who's been watching the show for so long, we come in with, we call it like seed conditions or initial conditions. You already have a way that you view Survivor based on your previous experiences with Survivor. And that can be how you feel about twists, how you feel about certain contestants, how you feel about the way that Jeff talks during all of the immunity challenges. All of that information influences how you perceive a new season. And so, yeah, if you're kind of used to seeing a certain person edited in this way, or you're used to a certain type of Survivor, then you're more likely to gravitate towards those types of thoughts, you know? And humans love to make the easy comparison. This thing is like that thing. It's an evolutionary behavior that we've developed so we could survive. Fire is hot. Stay away from fire. Other things are hot. We stay away from them. So it's like, oh yeah, you are just naturally conditioned to perceive Xander as the golden boy because of your, you know, your initial conditioning.
Yeah. And fair or unfair for Xander, here comes Xander, mm-hmm. who wasn't even born when the show started. And now he's the person that has to, at 20 years old, deal with all this.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Poor Xander. He just happens to be the, I don't know, spokesperson is not the right word, but the mm-hmm. person who has to deal with all of this. I also think about that within the context of twists. And if I'm being too harsh on the Survivor twists and the things that they're throwing, you know, throwing at the wall and seeing what sticks, just because it's like, okay, just because I'm used to a certain type of game of Survivor, does that mean that I should be so opposed to this? Like the do or die twist, just a gut natural reaction in me was like, this is garbage. Get this away from me. Mm-hmm. And then the more we thought about it, I think you and I were sort of aligned with the fact that they were given the option to choose whether or not they wanted to participate in the challenge. And so, you know, there were choices that were involved with that. But yeah, there's such a history with the show and all of that influences how we see these new seasons. Even if it is, you know, drop the four, keep the one, we still have that history of the previous 40 seasons.
So just going back to Xander and his gameplay aside, I told him this when I talked to him the other day. I really thought that he added a lot of fun to the season because I think that, you know, I'm sure as you and Mike really focus in on like a lot of the wackiness on the B&B in a lot of the games. This was, I thought, probably one of the least wacky seasons of the show. And I do feel like that a lot of the wackiness, at least that I found on the podcast, came from Xander. And actually, there was no shortage of that in the finale. There was a moment that Xander had, which that I thought was really, really odd, where Xander was talking about how he really loved the inclement weather that was happening on the island. And he was ready to have the weather gods bring it on.
It's pouring rain. I'm soaking wet. I'm cold. I'm hungry. But hey, I don't care. I feel like a rock star, man. Like, hello, Fiji. Are you ready to rock? 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
All right. Going back to Mike Bloom's theory of Xander Hastings actually is a Benjamin Button. What is he? Brett Michaels? Liana, where? What 20-year-old is like going to these rock concerts?
I don't know. He's just an enigma. What rock concerts are being, you know, like featured out in Fiji? That I would also like to know. In the pouring rain, that was such a random moment, and it came after the whole "all I need to eat is adrenaline" or whatever. As they're crumbling, I'll be rising to the top. I was like, Xander is losing it. Mm-hmm. Something is going on here. I don't know. What do you think? I guess it would be a rock band. That's what he's saying, right? He would be in a rock band. Otherwise, what type of band would Xander be in?
I don't know.
A punk ska band? Yeah. What's he into?
Are there still rock bands? I know that Jeff Probst told Dalton Ross that, hey, rock is alive and well. So maybe that's why that Jeff liked Xander so much.
Or maybe he was just looking at the things around him and he was like, rock band. Got mm-hmm. it. Nailed yeah. it.
Do you know what I'm talking about with when Jeff Probst?
Yeah, that was the interview. He was like going to concerts and stuff, right?
Yeah, or something so like it was that? it was at the Merge that Jeff Dalton Ross talked to Jeff Probst, and so he asked him about the big twist and Erica and the hourglass, and Jeff said, "Let me just start by saying that I returned from yeah. watching Greta Van Fleet at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles, so I am a bit amped up. They rocked it so hard, the sold out house was on fire. I was really impressed. There's no doubt about it. Rock is alive and well." Are you hey Fiji, are you ready
pouring
to rock?
Rain. I'm soaking wet, I'm cold, I'm hungry, but hey, I don't care. I feel like a rock star, man. Like, hello Fiji, are you ready to rock?
Yeah, Greta Van Fleet.
Woo! Sold out house.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's hard for me to not say Greta Van Susteren.
Well, you know, Jeff can teach you the, the ways of the rock bands. I don't know. Maybe Jack Black will be here soon. You know, he's was on that movie School of Rock with Mike White. It's all connected.
Was it all connected? Yeah.
School of Rock.
Yeah.
Oh man. Xander also had this moment. It was so subtle where he is finding the melons. Like he was like, he found two melons and he goes, all right. And all I could think of was Matthew. He was like, all right, all right, all right. Mm-hmm. And this was part of my whole, oh, okay. Yeah. Xander is definitely losing it from that and describing his game as a wholesale game.
Yes. He has more of a wholesale game.
Yeah. So we buy in bulk. I didn't quite understand exactly what that meant, but sure.
But Liana, as like he was getting like a lot of these confessionals in the finale, I was like, oh, I think Xander's going to win. And then when he got the flashback, like I was like, oh, it's on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was his because I they've given out a lot of these flashbacks where they've shown footage or images from the contestants' previous life experiences. Previous life, it sounds like they were reincarnated. Yeah. So this was his first with the cross country team-ness of it all.
Yeah.
So very inspirational telling his story from back home.
Liana, what about when Xander was talking about how he used to have muscles?
Oh, what is that?
Yeah.
And I was like, it's your arm.
I don't know. It still looks pretty good.
He looked really buff still. So
yeah. Like, I wouldn't worry about it, bro. Like, I think you're still good.
It was just a cutting cycle. You can start bulking when you get to Ponderosa.
Yeah. Don't worry. Like, you don't have to worry about like putting on a lot of weight. Not if you just eat Xander candy.
Yeah. You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
So another funny moment for me from the finale, Liana, I don't know if you've noticed that there's been this weirdness where that the players come into the challenge and there's this like a little weirdness, and I don't know if they're choosing to highlight this because it's Erica or what, but here is the final five immunity challenge. Everybody walks in and has some conversation with Jeff.
You again?
I'm waiting for it.
Oh, hi. I didn't think I'd see you today.
Hi. Thanks, Heather.
I've gotten
used to the highs. Oh. That never happened.
Are you going to miss us when it's over?
Yes.
Good.
So, Leah, this was like, first of all, Erica didn't think she was going to see Jeff today. I mean, like, Erica, come on, there's like 2 days left. What do you think you're doing? the same thing happened a couple of episodes ago where Erica comes in and it's like, hi, Jeff. And he's like, oh, I got a good morning. Oh, this is amazing. And then Heather's plays in also. But then when Erica asked Jeff, are you going to miss us after the season is over, was Jeff convincing? Let me play that part again, okay?
Hi. Oh. That never happened.
Are you going to miss us when it's over?
Yes.
Good.
that was not a convincing. Yes.
Yeah.
Why would you say that?
Of course. Yes. Obviously. Going to be requesting that Xander, you know, and his new rock band play the Shantham. I'm just going to miss you guys so much. Mm-hmm. That was weird. I didn't notice it also with the hourglass twist. I think it's when Erica shows up when all the other contestants are lined up in front of the immunity challenge and Erica shows back up. And I think there's something about like, oh, Erica, you're still smiling and saying hi. Or so there was something along those lines. So I think this had been going on for a long time and now we just finally got to see more of it. But it's a little awkward.
Yeah.
Is it awkward? I don't know. It's like, what do you say to Jeff? It's kind of a weird professional relationship. Do you be like, hello, how's it going? How are you? Are you having a good day? Do you say nothing? I don't know.
I wonder if this was something that they put in the episodes that was like, oh, okay, well, they were going to show that like Erica is like such a ray of sunshine that every time she comes into the challenge, she brightens Jeff's day.
Right. The social game works even on Jeff.
Jeff. She comes into challenge and lifts his spirits.
And we talk about how tough it is to show the social game, right? How tough is it to show that you make someone feel good? Well, here is a perfect example. Yeah. And Jeff, he's definitely going to miss them when they're gone.
Yeah. Well, the back and forth with Jeff, I guess we've seen like the good and the, I guess that's sort of like the best case scenario where like Erica comes in and it's like, hi, Jeff. And then Heather follows up is like, good morning, Jeff. And then he's like, wow. I guess on the flip side of that is sort of like Colby saying that he's ready to start the challenge now. He doesn't want to eat the chocolate. So like, I guess you could get Jeff like upset also before the challenge.
Right. Yeah, I guess there is a flip side to it. I guess most people are neutral, but you can have the extremes in either direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So we did not get to hear from anybody in the audience at the finale on Wednesday night, Liana. So that, I don't know if that made you sad, but what we do have for you is one of our callers, the great Av Sinensky of the pretty good podcast, called in, and he gave us the thoughts of his daughter, who is a Survivor watcher. Uh-huh. Are you ready to hear the takeaways from a young person who watched the season of Survivor?
I'm very excited. My question is, though, did she write down on a piece of parchment who she predicted to win?
I don't know if she did that, but this was her takeaways for Survivor 41.
Yeah, this is Annie from Long Island, and I wanted to share my top five favorite things about Survivor 41. Number five, they made it really hard for the players by making them keep switching islands like again and again and again.
Okay. Leo, did you like it how they made them keep switching islands again and again and again?
Okay, not gonna lie, would never have thought of that for either my top five or bottom five. See? Best or worst things
this
about
is why
Survivor.
We have to get young people to weigh in. You might be too old to see this, that kind of stuff.
I know. I this is the perspective
this
that we're
is
missing.
The game. This okay. is the audience okay. that we're like the game within the game audience that like we're catering the show to.
That's right.
They
the future
like
Survivor
switching
players.
Islands. Don't get too comfortable. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
They like switching islands. Got it.
Number four from Annie.
Number four. I've never seen this before, and they read the votes at the final tribal council, and it was so exciting because like I never seen that before.
Okay, kids, they don't like to wait. Don't make them like wait, and then we cut to Los Angeles. To just that my son says, I tell him, I just watched Survivor. He says, Dad, just tell me who got voted off. I don't need to I don't need to watch the episode. Just tell me what happens.
Straight to the point. No need for the riffraff. Just cut straight to it.
Boom.
Let's do it.
Boom.
Okay.
That's
all right.
You know, that it's just like that.
Snappy.
You know, these kids, they watch videos on YouTube. They open the toys right away.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, that's what they say. You know, time is money. Money is time. Time is power. Right. So we just gotta
just
keep,
do it.
Keep rolling
what are we
with
waiting
it?
For? Yes, just open the votes. Just, okay.
I mean, Nike had it right. Just do it.
Okay. Number three.
Number three. There were so many twists and fun advantages, like how Erica broke the hourglass and changed every single thing that happened, and how there was like this final advantage that made her go advanced in the challenge.
Okay. So kids like the hourglass. They like the advantages, Liana.
Pro advantage. Yes. I like that the hourglass changed everything. And the one advantage, did it have a name? I don't know. The challenge advantage or
yeah,
whatever.
It was just like a final five advantage that it turned out that if you did the game within the game, then you actually knew the advantage ahead of time.
Yeah, look, props to Mike for thinking, because didn't he think that it was going to be related when he, it was 4 hours all blurred together to me. Yeah, he knew it. He knew the dancing trees or whatever it was going to be relevant.
Yes.
Look, finger on the pulse for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Number two.
Number two. Tiffany went online on Twitter and saw my essay that I wrote about Survivor 41.
Okay. Tiffany responded to Annie Av's daughter and was really great with the fans. So that's a great thing. If you are 8 years old and you have a parent that's on social media, they can post your essays and the survivors will respond to you.
Okay, yes. So the engagement with the contestants. I don't know how Survivor the show takes advantage of that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would be interesting to hear this child's perspective on Jeff talking to the audience. Does that level of engagement also work, or does it have to be sort of a direct one-to-one contact in response to something that you wrote? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But if you have a young child who watches the show, that I think that the survivors will probably respond to your messages.
I think so. Them. I think that's
them
the way
them.
To
yeah.
Yeah, to get them to respond. It's a child. Of course, they're going to say something, right? Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then number one, best thing about the season.
Number one, the winner was a girl, but they're mostly boys. The boys think they're stronger than the girls, but they're really not. Thank you for listening to this, Rob. Bye.
Okay. All right.
Yes. So,
yes. The winner was there. There were mostly boys, but
yep. Yep.
They thought they were stronger than the girl, but they weren't.
They weren't, right? Not just Survivor.
Yeah.
Applies to life as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, thank you, Annie. And thank you for sending that our way. And so just a very favorable review from Annie.
So just to go back to point two here, Rob, have you ever considered the strategy of either, you know, posing as your children or using your children to get more information from Survivor players, perhaps if they, you know, won't reply to your messages?
No. So my son, Dominic, he was super into Big Brother that, you know, for whatever reason, the Survivor season didn't hold his attention. Like, you know, that I feel like that Big Brother, he was there night in, night out. Survivor just does not, for whatever reason, hold his attention. It wasn't just this season, like any particular Survivor season. Sometimes he'll come in the room, but I just feel like that, you know, Big Brother, like he will rewatch episodes, all about it. Really like begged me like, Dad, if you ever talk to Derek X, you have to tell him that I'm his biggest fan. But nobody in the Survivor season really captivated him like that.
Mm. Do you think that's something that Jeff should be concerned about? You know, he spends a lot of time talking about the future Survivor players and this is for families. Now, if he does a sample size, you know, there's going to be maybe the younger demographic is not going to respond in the way that he wants.
Yeah, and maybe that plays into the Xander of it all, where I think that, you know, and I think that JD also got a lot of that in the pre-merge part of the game, that I think that, you know, so much of the show is like catered to young audiences that I wonder if that's a thing where they really want to portray you know, the younger players, in this case, it's the younger male players, like in a very positive light, where that they want to like feel like that's their farm team of trying to bring up more players to the show.
It's all about recruitment. You know, you got to like get in there. I don't know if they do scouting or anything like that. I guess just at clubs
in LA. Well, that's the game within the game. That's like the bait to get more like young people watching the show.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about that. Survivor, they're selling your information when you sign up for the game within the game. That's how they get you. They have your contact information now.
Yes.
They can target you. Targeted ads to apply for Survivor.
They recruit you to come out after you play the game within the game. Parents, oh my be careful. God. That was the one thing that my son was very much into. Like, Dad, stop it. We got to watch the game within the game.
Okay, yeah. So they're on to something there. Then that makes sense.
Well, but that being said, like the phrases that a lot of the game within the game answers were was like, when he doesn't know like what some of them are of like, he's never heard these phrases before.
That's a great point. I never thought about that before, because if you're trying to market it to children, like what children are going to be remembering some of these phrases that you've chosen? I don't know. Maybe they only want the dedicated fans, you know, the kids that are like really into Survivor.
Some of them like he got instantly, but some of them are like, you know, very like sort of like in the weeds. So that he wasn't able to figure out some of them. I didn't even wasn't able to get.
Yeah. Well, speaking of commercials, do you get the I think it's Consumer Cellular.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh. The first one that I saw, or the first one that I remember that lodged in my brain, was the one where it's Wendell's win.
Yes.
And they have the kid in the audience holding up the fact that she predicted that Wendell was going to win the season. But the way it's edited, it looks like she voted for Wendell to win the season. Mm-hmm. So this child is the reason why he won the season.
Yes. Oh my gosh, she was the tiebreaker, I think. That
he was the tiebreaker. Right. Yeah. If I remember correctly. Yeah. She was the child in the audience.
Yeah. Leanna, what is consumer cellular?
I do not know.
Yeah.
I do not know. But they must be taking my data, because we got a consumer cellular like pamphlet or mailer thing that showed up. I've literally never heard of consumer cellular before in my life until I saw these Survivor commercials.
I think Nicole's dad might have consumer cellular. They seem to be a cell phone provider that really caters to like maybe like a 60 plus crowd. I'll go to their website. I think that the two people that are on the front page of the website, like, I think that this is the audience, that they are catering to, where,
okay.
Yeah.
Literally, you're not wrong. On the Wikipedia page, it says Consumer Cellular became the preferred provider for AARP members, becoming the first cell phone company to market exclusively to the over 50.
Like the Consumer Cellular, you don't use any of those apps, right? What are you paying all this money for?
Oh my God. In 2011, they developed a partnership with Sears. Was Sears not already?
In 2011, you would think that they were defunct in 2011.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, did they still exist in 2011? Who thought that was a smart business decision?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Apparently nationwide talks, text, and data for as low as $20 a month. It's like, look, are you getting a lot of data? No, but this is the cheapest cell phone plan you can get. Consumer cellular.
Low cost, no contract, that kind of stuff. Cell phone selections include basic flip phones. So
A flip phone. Why are you paying so much a month for?
Okay.
Your phone is in a holster on your belt. Get consumer cellular.
Seriously, it's the right choice.
Mm-hmm. It's awarded by J.D. Power 11 times in a row. Number one in customer service among wireless value.
What does that even mean?
Yeah. Plus, AARP members get a 5% monthly discount.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then, okay. But then explain to me why they would want to market to survive.
Well, Leanna, I have some bad news for you. I have some bad news for you. The key demo for this show that's been on for 20 plus years, might be.
Oh no.
Just saying.
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I'm a Xander at heart. I promise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Their website will not even load for me on Chrome. Do I have to use Internet Explorer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It works on Internet Explorer.
Okay.
Good to know.
Leanna, I don't know if you remember this. They also, there was like a consumer cellular during the, I'm trying to think if, I think it was like during the last season of The Amazing Race that they had they even had Phil narrating them for a couple of weeks, and then they just stopped the campaign. Like, it was that Phil talked about a great Amazing Race moment where the woman got the watermelon smashed on her face. Then the second one was talking about one of the royal weddings. It wasn't even the Amazing Race, and then it was it was stopped. It's over.
Yes, no, I do. I remember that, because on the podcast, were you guys going to do the consumer cellular minute or whatever? And because that's what it was on the Amazing Race, and then it just disappeared. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they pulled their money or what happened. They ran out of moments. I don't know.
I don't know, but we'll see if consumer cellular continues this partnership with Survivor into season 42.
Yeah, it's the power of connection. And yes, it was the power of connection, the royal wedding.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The show was on, Tough as Nails also. The Amazing Race and Tough as Nails. Okay.
All right. I can see that. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's check in with our friend Megan, the librarian, has a question about Erica's win.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Leanna. This is Megan, the librarian, calling. Since Survivor started allowing Canadians to play, a full one-third of the Canadian contestants have won the game. Okay, fine, it's a small sample size, but still. My question for Liana is, you have a connection to Canada. Would you consider moving here in order to have a better shot at winning Survivor one day? And by the way, Liana, you sound exactly like my friend Helen. It's actually kind of weird.
Oh.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay.
Okay. I hope that you like Helen. Mm-hmm. And this
she said it was her friend. She didn't say it was my my frenemy, Helen.
That's true. That's true. Yes. Okay. Well, let me do my best Helen impression to try to answer this question. So, look, the numbers don't lie. 33%, 33.33333% chance of getting a poll vote.
How did you know that?
Oh, I must have a PhD or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That's what they teach you in graduate school. That is not the reason. It is the not paying taxes that it would be the reason. Because from what I understand, Canada does not tax those earnings. So even though I think like she could either would pay it and get refunded. I'm not a tax attorney. I don't know. But that's what I've been seeing on the internet, that she's actually going to take all of that money and then it would be in Canadian.
Liana, this is a segment that we need to do. Like, can we get any actuaries, accountants, somebody that could explain the tax implications of Erica, a Canadian citizen, winning Survivor. I think that this would be maybe Christian Hubicki. I don't know if he also actually on the side does taxes, could come in with the whiteboard. But yeah, we need somebody to go like full Kornacki and explain the tax implications.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes. Well, international tax law, not my strong suit, but the fact that it was in Fiji, does that matter? In Fiji, but a Canadian citizen, but it's an American company, I assume. So I really don't know how that works, but the word on the street, people on the street are saying that she will get to take home all of the money and not pay any taxes. We'll see.
Wow. Wow.
I know.
Okay.
I know.
So, boy, this is huge. I wonder, can anybody, if you're a future Survivor player, could you acquire Canadian citizenship before playing in Survivor?
That's a good idea. That's quite the commitment.
Very committed to the bit, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So first, you got to apply for your permanent residency card, which is depending on your qualifications, you may or may not get. Then you have to live there for I think 3 out of 5 years. Then you apply for citizen. It's a very complicated process. Okay.
So, you've done your research on this. Yes.
I've thought about it. Yes. Look, for the purposes of winning Survivor, obviously a benefit, but it is a lot of groundwork.
Okay. So then, Liana, what about that? Do you think that Canadians seem to have an inherent advantage? I mean, that not for anything, Shan came pretty close also to being a winner. That do you feel like that? Is there some sort of like a baked in advantage that Canadians are coming in and having? I mean, Tom Laidlaw didn't do that great.
Well, he was living in the United States for a while, right? And I think he was living in the United States at the time because this was that was after they allowed, because he was a Canadian citizen, but yeah. So maybe that was the Americanization that happened that, you know, got rid of that inherent benefit that would help you in winning Survivor. I mean, being polite.
Good social game.
Good social game.
Underestimated. Unassuming.
Socialized medicine. Timmy Hortons, you know, those are all things that I think contribute.
Those are things. Yes.
Yeah. Those are things. The wilderness. Yes. Being used to nature, I assume is a thing. Most of Canada is just nature.
Yeah.
So
I'm not sure how much time Erica spends in nature in downtown Toronto.
But yeah. Oh my gosh. That was also the joke. It was like, even though she takes home the full winning, she still can't afford a home in Toronto.
Oh,
real estate.
Hey, she
prices,
also got that cameo money that I sent her. Ooh. Also.
Doing the Lord's work, Rob, just trying to help Erica out. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I think we need a little bit more data on this, but at least two of the three data points that we have certainly seem to indicate that there could be an advantage to playing as a Canadian.
I have not looked at the Survivor 42 cast. I don't know if there are multiple or any Canadian citizens playing in Survivor 42. If a Canadian wins Survivor 42, do you think that the Canadians in season 43 will have a big target on their back?
It will be like, anyone who is a Canadian will win this game. We have to target the Canadians.
Guys, if we don't target the Canadians off the bat.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Not a country on country survivor feud. I don't know how that would necessarily work out. But if another survivor is able to win, then maybe I will genuinely consider moving. It really does seem like an advantage. Although I guess as an implant, I don't know, a transplant, if I get those natural abilities or if I have to live in Canada for a while to really, you know, soak it all up. But we'll see. We'll see with Survivor 42.
Okay. Let's take a question from Josh Green about the Final Four fire making.
What's going on, Rob and Liana? It's Josh from Philly. Hope you both are having constant refills of champagne and pizza. Woo! Throughout this voicemail recap of the finale. I want to talk about this defensive move here from Xander for the fire making challenge. While I know that he looked very dumb at the Final Four Tribal Council, I do think that he may have touched on something that we haven't seen in Survivor history. And I think he might just be a little too young to have realized how to really effectively communicate to the jury. But do you think we could see the fire making being used in an effective defensive way as opposed to Xander using it in an ineffective way during this finale? Would love to hear both your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay. Liana, do you think there's anything to the idea of not giving people the opportunity to, like, if somebody is good, don't give them the chance to put another thing on their resume?
This is interesting because even in the episode itself, it felt like the decision, there were two decisions that Xander was trying to, or two outcomes that Xander was trying to decide between. One was take Erica, thereby for like not allowing her to get that sort of flashy move. And then the other flip side was to send himself in against her, which feel like it's like, do you want Erica out or not? Because either you send her into fire making and you do it yourself because you think that she's a threat. I don't understand why not giving her the opportunity to make fire is going to be the thing that changes the game. Mm-hmm. It feels like she's so far ahead. And I mean, he said he didn't necessarily think that, but at least to us and to the jury, it felt like Erica was so far ahead that this defensive move wasn't going to make a difference. And he should have just taken the risk to eliminate Erica at that point in time. And then the decision was, okay, I'm going to send her in, but who am I going to put her against? Am I going to be the one to do it? Or am I going to trust someone like Heather or Deshaun to do that?
Yeah, I just think it was like faulty logic. And I asked him about this in the exit interview. And like, it seemed like that he was coming at it from a place of like, hey, I don't want to have to deal with that. What if I screwed it up? And what if I get beat? And then I'll never know how I would have done in the final three, where it was almost like, hey, I'm ahead 51-49. If I give her the chance to she could, you know, she could put her in, she could go ahead. Or she could beat me and knock me out, where I just think that if it's close, I think you got to do it based on what we've seen from these like Final Four fire makings over the years. And then unless you're like way ahead, I kind of feel like that you just have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right. It doesn't, unless it is that close, it just doesn't seem to make any sense that will be the thing that's make or break. Because if she's that close to beating you, I don't know. I didn't quite... I understood it when he first explained it, but then as I thought about it a little bit more, I was like, yeah, this really doesn't make sense. And then that was why Ricard was also asking that question about, well, you said you got rid of me because I was the biggest threat, yet you took Erica with you because mm-hmm. you didn't want to give her the opportunity. Yeah. But she's also a big threat. So like, what?
I smiled during that moment because I felt like that Ricard asked the question in a way like, I feel like you're going to have to answer the question about why you didn't do that. And I felt a little bit like, yeah, like that's going to be like a big like exit interview question for Xander.
Yeah, just be ready because, you know, wow, or whatever Ricard's answer to that was. It just didn't seem It didn't seem like he really fully thought it through.
Have people talked enough about how incredible Ricard's hair was all season long?
Yes, that has been a topic of conversation.
People have talked about that enough. I can't decide if I'm more impressed with Ricard's hair in the ponytail or when it was down.
I don't know. I think it's both are enjoyable in their own right. I do think that the hair at Final Tribal, though, now that was a statement in and of itself. I don't know how he got it to lay that way and stay so structured.
Yeah, I don't understand. This was just the most incredible thing in the whole season. This is Ricard's hair.
Oh my gosh. And that smile, that damn smile, that plus the hair. He's just a very attractive human being. So it's tough.
It was very impressive. Like I don't know if it's like a shampoo endorsement or what, but I mean this was like with no shampoo. So imagine when the guy has access to product.
I know, right? The 3-in-1 at Ponderosa, not exactly doing the job. I think that maybe it would normally. I mean, being a flight attendant is about presentation. And so I'm sure that that's something that Ricard takes very seriously.
Yep. Liana, are you ready to talk about the finale week in social media?
Ooh, okay, I am, but I want to go back to the Final Four fire making just for one quick sec, because I think that, yes, there was a decision about this sort of playing it defensive of whether or not you should take Erica with you as a way to disarm her. But I went back and I looked at the numbers because we sort of talked about the concept of, do you have to throw yourself into fire making. And I think it's definitely situational. When I went back, we've got 7 seasons that have had sort of the forced Final Four fire making.
Yes. And the tiebreaker.
The tiebreaker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you remove Edge of Extinction, because that was such a interesting situation, which we can talk about. But if you think about who went into fire making and won, you have 3 people, Ben, Wendell, Tony. If you have, then you have the flip side, either someone who won immunity or was taken, and you have Nick, Tommy, and Erica. So the data is pretty split that half the time, if you make fire making, you go on to win. And half the time, if you make fire and successfully, you go on to lose. I think the big question is whether or not the people who, let's say they lost. So the people who won fire, that would be Nora who won fire, or no, Dean who won fire, but then lost. Mm-hmm. Deshaun who won fire and then lost. No, wait, Xander. Okay. Wait. I'm confusing myself.
Yes.
Because the question is the person who won immunity, should they have thrown themselves in? So like Nora won immunity. Yes. Should she have thrown herself in? Xander won immunity. Should he have thrown himself in? Dom on Ghost Island won immunity. Should he have thrown himself in? I think that's what we don't know, because at least does fire making inherently give you an advantage? No, the data says it's half-half, right? 3 people won, 3 people lost. But could you overcome that not having to go into fire making and be able to win? You know, Chris was able to do it.
I think that that's what Nick did. Nick did not go into the fire making, and then he did go on to win in 37. I really feel like that Chris is the paradigm shift when he does it. I don't think that let's say Nora goes into the Final Tribal Council and beats Tommy. Like, still don't think, I think probably Lauren will win the season, in that case. I don't think it's necessarily like an end all be all if you end up like, knocking somebody out because you made the fire. I think it could have only helped Xander's case. I think that maybe Deshaun, could potentially win in that instance where it's Deshaun, a Xander beating Erica. Like I don't think that Ricard, it doesn't sound like that he would have voted for Deshaun under really any circumstances. I think that maybe he might have voted for Xander after Xander knocked out Erica, who was the person that Ricard thought was the best player in the game. So maybe I think like Xander probably gets a couple of votes in that scenario, but I don't think it's necessarily like if you make the fire, you ultimately are the catch all. And then Like if Tony won the final four fire making, or if Tony won the final four immunity and right. then said, okay, Sarah and Natalie make fire. I don't think that he would have lost had he not put himself into the fire.
Right. I think that the Edge of Extinction was just such a outlier when it comes to the data that everybody else, I don't think that you could necessarily overcome. The jury has pretty much at least made up their mind somewhat. But anyway, I thought that was very interesting because I think I always thought like, oh yeah, if you win fire making, you're going to win. Well, that not necessarily, especially with Tommy and Erica both being taken to the final tribal and then being able to win. I thought that was interesting, but we'll see if they continue to keep, which I assume they will, the final four tiebreaker fire.
It's been good drama.
It's been good. Yes. Okay. Yes. My other thought on this is because you were saying, even though as much as we poo-poo the fire making, it's been really entertaining. And I totally agree with you, but I think of it in the same way that the reward decision, cake and candy versus chicken and vegetables, that the fire making is so entertaining. It's the candy. It's the cake that
you
oh
want
my gosh,
the
it's
Xander
so sweet.
Candy.
It's so great. I want the Xander candy. I want the Xander candy. I want to have something that even though in that moment, is it as tasty? No, but it is more fulfilling in the long run. Mm-hmm. That's my take on fire making.
Yeah, but I think that if we asked Annie, like fire making, like she's like, oh yeah, that's awesome. It's so cool when they do that. So I kind of think that's the way that the producers look at the show. Just to go back to the Xander candy, I noticed again when that we saw the reward that Heather and Erica had, which was like steak and vegetables and bread. It happened to be another plate of broccoli after last week we had chicken and broccoli, not to mention we had a whole immunity clue to get the advantage of that. Now that I think of it, broccoli is looks like little trees. Liana, what is with all the broccoli this season? Is Stu like a big broccoli guy of like when he came on was like, okay, I have one condition. We're going to bring in a lot of broccoli into Survivor. I think it's perfect. Looks like little trees. I love it.
Very nature.
I like what you said about little trees. Okay. You're hired.
Survivor.
Yeah. Did we get a broccoli pizza at the final tribal council?
We didn't get a zoom in of it. If only Jeff had explained that to the people who are just tuning in. And just so you know, our pizza, our broccoli pizza is made fresh here by Stu.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we thought Consumer Cellular was the ones who were shilling out to support Survivor. I think Big Broccoli got
Big
in
broccoli.
Here. You know? Yeah, this is, look, Survivor, marketing to kids, the next generation, kids don't like broccoli. We got to turn around the narrative. Look, mm-hmm. it's Xander, your favorite player eating broccoli.
Or Liana, you know who does really love broccoli?
No.
That's what? same audience that loves Consumer Cellular.
It's the official
Big broccoli is like, hey,
AARP.
Look, we gotta advertise on one show. We've only got budget for one show. Like, all right. There's a show called Survivor. It's been on for 20 plus years. It's on 8 o'clock, right before our key demo goes to bed.
Mm-hmm. It is the perfect show mm-hmm. for broccoli. Yes. Yeah.
Perfect show mm-hmm. for broccoli. It's a new era, but broccoli is classic. It's timeless.
Broccoli is forever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Drop the four, keep the broccoli.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, are you ready to Brock Fiji?
Woo!
Yeah. All right, Liana, let's talk about the Survivor social media from finale week. And so well, let's go to TikTok.
Ooh.
Can't do TikTok with Consumer Cellular, I don't think. Okay.
No.
Nobody's ever tried TikTok on Consumer Cellular.
I think it would break their phones. Do you think they have a TikTok account?
I don't know. That is Consumer Cellular on TikTok.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I think they might be really focused on Facebook.
Yes, yeah. I think so.
The Survivor Facebook page is sponsored by Consumer Cellular. Check it out and get a 5% discount with an AARP membership over at Consumer Cellular. PC Mag Reader's Choice 8 years in a row.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
PCMag.com, the actual subscribers to PC Magazine.
Right. Of course. The actual physical magazine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again. Okay. Demo. Right.
All right. So that let's check out the TikTok of another PhD. That would be Evie. All right. Evie has done this before. At Evie's birthday, they did the TikTok trend of who is going to get the most drunk on finale night. The 41 players got together. Are you interested in a little bit of the who is going to get the most drunk game?
Yes, I love this meme. Let's do it.
Okay. All right. Who's going to get the most drunk? Let's ask the season 41 contestants.
This is Evie. I am out with a significant portion of the cast of Survivor 41. And I'm pretty sure that Sarah's going to get the drunkest tonight. Let's find out.
I'm JD, and I think that Evie's going to be the drunkest tonight.
I'm Danny, and I'm sure that Evie is going to be the drunkest tonight.
I'm Sean, and I'm sure that Sarah's going to end up on the floor blackout drunk tonight.
I'm Abraham, and based off last night, Evie will be drunk.
Hey, I'm Sarah, and I'm already drunk. But I think Evie's going to be the drunkest.
All right, then if you want to find out how the rest of the night played out, go check out Evie on TikTok.
Oh my gosh, two things Evie that stood Jagoda. Out to me.
Yes.
I love them yelling truth bomb when Deshaun is trying to speak. Mm-hmm. And then the call when Abraham is trying to use the phone, I assume, of like yeah. baby boomer.
Abraham might be a Consumer Cellular subscriber.
Yes, I believe the correct demographic.
That is possible. Okay. So Erica, of course, was the big winner this week. And so that Entertainment Weekly tweeted, Survivor crowns its first champion in 19 months, which was Erica. Jollibee Restaurant weighed in and, of course, tweeted out, congratulations, Erica. Can't believe you went a month on the island without a proper meal. Stop on by and I'll make you a plate. So congratulations to Erica. Jollibee Restaurant, I do think, has Filipino cuisine. And that does that mean Erica gets all you can eat at Jollibee?
Based on the text of this tweet, I think she only gets one plate.
One plate. So,
yeah, it doesn't seem to me that it is a longer deal than that based yes. on this, but it's ambiguous.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the play here for Erica? Does she walk into a Jollibee and show the person at the counter her phone and say, hey, the Twitter account said I will make you a plate if you come in?
So I would like to redeem this tweet, please. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. If that works, I am going to be Photoshopping a bunch of tweets.
Yeah. I mean, like if Wendy tells you, come on in, you've got some spicy nuggets on me.
Right. I'll fry some up just for you. Mm-hmm. Then she could capitalize on all of this. I think it's, you know, really a way to stretch the Survivor fame, get some extra meals out of this.
Okay. All right. This season of Survivor, Liana, has been called by some the hardest season of Survivor ever. But some in the Survivor alumni that they are not seeing it that way. One of those people is Eliza Orleans said, cannot stop rolling my eyes whenever they are calling this the hardest season of Survivor ever. Stop trying to make fetch happen. Hashtag Survivor 41 cast. It's disrespectful and an abject falsehood.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that it was that concrete. I was going to come in here saying that this is like, you know, running 400 meters versus running 3 miles or something like that. Like both can be very challenging, but they might be challenging in different ways. But I do not have the experience to be able to comment on which one is harder. All Survivor looks absolutely excruciatingly tough to my naive eyes. So I don't know if I can really say one way or another. another, which season is harder.
Yeah, I think it's hard to measure the hardness of a Survivor season. If I was going to create a metric, I don't think it's necessarily about the days played. I think that these survivors were given very little, if not nothing. However, their weather was not too bad. I do think that the weather needs to be factored into the equation. I don't like in terms of like in my mind, like I'm not sure if, you know, Vanuatu or Micronesia like measures up. If I was going to come up with a list of off the top of my head, the hardest seasons ever. But I do think that I would look at the seasons where it rained 32 out of 39 days.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So I think that's a good point. I think that there are different factors. It's a where's Christian when you need him to put together the mathematical equation of what can accurately predict the hardness of a season. It's like food, weather, right?
Yeah, food, weather, and just sort of like, you know, there's other things sort of like, just like the conditions of like the place that you were at. Like they say, like, the Marquesas, was just was horrible because there was nothing to eat. And then there was also just like, you were just being attacked by, the no-nos and, that was really bad. Also, Africa was like also like they had like no water, and even though it didn't rain, it was like terrible for other reasons. So, you know, it's a complicated equation.
Mm-hmm, right. I think we identify the key factors that contribute to the overall hardness, the weather, availability of resources, annoying contestants, I think needs to be a factor on there. You know, if you have someone who's really driving you crazy, I think that could technically increase the hardness of the
cast,
season.
The cast could certainly add to the hardness of the season. Okay.
Right.
All right. So let's check in with another member of the 41 cast. And that was Xander. Xander posted a notes app. He said, I may not be the youngest winner in Survivor history, but I feel like $1 million. I was out there playing to make myself proud. Nobody else. And that's exactly what I did. I never would have believed I would get here in life. It's taught me that we can't be afraid to chase the impossible. I want to thank everyone for your support throughout this incredible journey. I will always be so grateful to have had the opportunity to play. I won't let this slow me down. It's a time to get out there and chase a new impossible. Heart emoji, butterfly emoji. And then he added, nothing but gratitude for this experience. The people who have supported me and the people of Survivor, community and crew who make the show what it is. Here are some reflections. So Xander, look, solid guy.
Mm-hmm. I think the only thing that would have made this better, he needed a waving emoji at the end, like something to indicate that the butterfly is saying hi or something, you know, just to really tie the experience of it. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, maybe like a ghost emoji.
Yes, exactly. I needed it to be a little bit more spelled out. I love the, you know, the callback to the butterflies, but that could have made it a little bit better.
And maybe that Xander could have just posted this.
It's pouring rain. I'm soaking wet. I'm cold. I'm hungry. But hey, I don't care. I feel like a rock star, man. Like, hello, Fiji. Are you ready to rock? 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay. All right. So we talked about, you know, Xander certainly has his supporters out there who feel like that, you know, he could have been the rightful winner to the season. And so, Liana, let me actually give you another another tweet before we go there. So this is from I don't have the tweet to share on the screen, but so Derek Levasseur, winner of Big Brother 16, he was in the camp that felt like that Xander should have won the season. Derek Levasseur at Derek L said Xander, who won two challenges, found an idol, had one of the most memorable moments/moves against Liana, and dismantled the majority alliance from the bottom. Didn't get a single vote. The Matrix is real. And we just had a glitch. Hashtag Survivor 41. There is no spoon. Okay.
I didn't realize I took the red pill, blue pill, whichever one. That, I don't know. It, I can't remember. I won't get Alzheimer's. That's for sure. But yeah. Yes. Okay. Okay, yes. Derek.
So Derek weighs in and felt like that. Okay, that Xander was robbed. First off, is Derek just pumped up for the new Matrix movie?
Yeah, I don't know. It's very timely. I'm just a big Keanu Reeves fan. I don't know where that came from. Yeah, the Matrix is
Matrix but also, Resurrections.
Like, what an odd choice. The Matrix is real. And we just had a glitch.
Is Derek binging the Matrix movies to get ready? Well, like, why is anybody talking about the Matrix?
It's very on point.
Is Xander giving him a Keanu realness? Is he Neo?
Maybe.
No spoon.
Oh my God. I don't know though how that fits with the whole Benjamin Button thing, because if Keanu Reeves doesn't age, but Xander is Benjamin Button, who's aging and I don't know. I can't make sense of that. That's too complicated for me.
Oh my God. So this is so wild that there were the Matrix is real and we just had a glitch. Who's Agent Smith? Is Derek Agent Smith?
Oh, I don't know. But I feel like he's also in. Is he saying that he's also in the Matrix and this is evidence that he's observing a glitch in the Matrix?
I don't know.
I don't know.
So Derek is Agent Smith, that he's in the Matrix. He can see it. He can see the glitch. I don't know. I don't know who's Morpheus. But so Xander is Neo, that he just got unplugged and realized, whoa. All right. So Ricard comes in. I don't know. Maybe Ricard is Morpheus. He says, Erica, who won two challenges, found the final advantage, put the biggest Shan move into split vote overdrive for extra security, and dismantled the majority alliance after an attempted challenge throw to take her out. One, Matrix is real and in good order. #Survivor #Survivor41.
Oh my God. First of all, I just love the fact that he clapped back at Derek. That's amazing. Obsessed with that. And he's all about his girl, Erica, defending her, not only at the tribal council, but also then on Twitter, on social media.
Yeah.
But I don't like the idea that he's confirming that we're in the Matrix. I don't want to be part of the Matrix, but I also don't want to be unplugged. Maybe I'll just, the lady in the red dress. I don't know.
Yeah. Who's the lady in the red dress?
Heather.
That's Heather?
I don't know. We don't really see her.
I think it was Tiffany. I think it was Tiffany at the at the final tribal council.
There we go. Okay. Yeah, I like this casting. That's a good idea. Huh. Mm-hmm. Okay, wait, who did we decide was? Okay, so did we decide who Morpheus was?
I think that Danny has the hair from Morpheus.
Yeah. I think so. So is Trinity then?
I think
Erica?
It might be Erica.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so. We can workshop this.
Yeah.
Welcome to the real world.
Yeah.
It does work because isn't Xander a CS guy? He's a computer science guy. And was it Neo? App a developer. Hacker?
Was he? Yeah. Well, I don't think that was Mr. Robot. I don't think he was a hacker.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. Okay, I really don't remember. I've not gone back and rewatched The Matrix from. I think I probably saw the first Matrix about like 100 times. And then the second and the third one, I think I watched like 0.75 times and said, okay, that's it. I'm never going back to this. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God, the second one was so bad. Yeah, well, maybe you and Akiva can do it on 3X, right? To prepare for the new one.
Yeah, I don't know if that is a good thing to put on the wheel. But I think that Akiva would not watch The Matrix because I think he would say it was too nerdy.
Oh, of course. Yes. I mean, he knows.
Yeah,
he knows. The music expert himself.
Do we have to have Derek Levasseur as the guest?
He seems about to be Matrix? The expert. Yeah, the expert in all things Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Or Ricard? I don't know. Maybe you can have him on to debate it out.
Does Ricard know a lot about the Matrix?
Although they're in agreement that the Matrix is real.
The Matrix is real.
Yeah, the Matrix is real. It's just a question of whether or not it's functioning properly. Is it in good order, or did we just have a glitch? That's the debate. But they have agreed that we are indeed in the Matrix.
Yes, and who is Heather in the Matrix?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The non-named character, unfortunately. I'm gonna look up the IMDb who wasn't named.
Yeah, we have to go back and watch the whole thing. All right. Mm-hmm. So Liana, but people I guess are feeling like Derek L that the Matrix is real and there's been a glitch. And so some people are taking matters into their own hands to fix the glitch in the Matrix. Okay. And so I'm very excited to talk with you about a big social movement / fundraiser mm-hmm. that is coming mm-hmm. together to help out the robbed king Xander. GoFundMe is here.
Thank God. The provider of healthcare and correcting the glitches in the Matrix. Okay. Yes.
All right. So if you are feeling like Derek L and you would like to help rectify the glitch in the Matrix, there is a GoFundMe setup that is called Giving Xander, the Robbed King, What He Deserves. I feel like we're a couple of commas short.
Mm-hmm. Right. Are we going to hire a hitman? That's my first interpretation of reading this. Yes. We're going to give him what he deserves.
No, I thought you were talking about you were going to bring Derek L back into this, then him and Cody.
Yeah, not the hitman.
Can you hire them to get this going? So this is put together by somebody named Hope Anthony. Hope Anthony is organizing this fundraiser, and it's on GoFundMe. Mm-hmm. It was created one day ago. Any Survivor fan can see that Xander was done wrong. Survivor played the best game and a bitter jury. So now, well, hold on. That Xander is just referred to in the third person as Survivor?
Survivor played the best
game. See, when I hear Survivor, I think the show, I guess we're talking about that Xander, I guess, here, henceforth known as Survivor, played the best game, and a bitter jury stole it from him. He got zero votes, despite how many challenges he won and how much of a social kick he was. He was a social kick.
What does that mean?
Is that a typo, or is that just a phrase that I am not familiar with?
But what would be the typo? Social lick?
King. So social king.
King. Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. So we're two letters off. They're not.
I think there might have been really a glitch in the Matrix. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
And G is nowhere near K. Okay.
So mm-hmm. on top of that, he mm-hmm. had many idols and advantages and blindsided in his belt. Blindsided sounds like that he was on the receiving end of blindside.
I think that it is that he had idols, advantages, and he accomplished blindsides, and that is all in his mm-hmm. tool belt.
Yeah.
But, yes.
The man was selfless and beyond deserving of the title. All the money raised from this will be donated to Xander, even if we can't get him the full million he deserves. Anything helps. Thank you, disappointed Survivor fan. So, the goal here is to raise $1 million for Xander Hastings to mm-hmm. offset the $1 million he should have gotten had there not been a glitch in the Matrix.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So we're trying to fight against the Matrix. Now, that seems like that's going to create more issues in the Matrix if we fight against it.
So as of right now, this GoFundMe is a little short of the $1 million goal We are currently at recording time at $20. So we are $999,980 short of the goal. For $20, I'm not sure if Xander could go see the new Matrix movie.
Oh, I see. Like, is that enough money for a ticket?
Is that enough money for a ticket?
Yeah, maybe. Depending if he goes to one of those fancy theaters that serves food or if he's going to go to a matinee showing, perhaps he might be able to.
Yeah. So
blindsided in his belt. I can't get over that. I also love Social Kick. I have such
kick. He's you're a Social Kick.
Social Kick. We're all Social Kicks. How fun.
Yeah. In Survivor Fiji, Rocky asked the jury question of who is the best kicker?
There we go. This is, it was just, it's all part of the narrative. So I love that GoFundMe has this thing that says GoFundMe guarantee. In the rare case, something isn't right, we will work with you to determine if misuse occurred. I mean, this is fighting against a glitch in the Matrix, obviously not misuse. So I think we're all good there.
Yes. Okay. So, Hope Anthony, keep hope alive. So we'll see if the Xander GoFundMe can get closer to the goal.
Well, Survivor did play the best game, and I think that this is important.
I mean,
an important cause.
I mean, somebody send this link to Derek.
Oh yeah, I mean, he can fund half of it, I guess, if he really feels a strong money about
Where his Matrix is.
Exactly. Oh, so help us correct the glitch in the Matrix.
Yeah,
Derek.
Somebody get
come
a hitman.
Come through.
Yeah. give the Xander, the robbed king, what he deserves.
Give him what he deserves. Yes. Robbed G. Odd.
Yes. Okay. And Erica also, she quote tweeted herself from February of I think February 11th of 2010, she had a tweet that said, by the way, I still watch Survivor. She replied to that tweet, OMG, I won.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's great. I love that. I love that. A whole year before Consumer Cellular partnered with Sears.
Yes. I mean she
really
literally
the game.
She went back in time.
I can't even imagine how many hourglasses she must have. She's got the time turner. She can go back in time. And,
I mean, she might be the Oracle. Forget Trinity.
Oh yeah. Okay. There we go. Oh, that's very interesting. I wonder how that changes, you know, the jury's perception of her if she comes out as the Oracle. You know, are they like, oh, well, you had an unfair advantage. Sorry, we can't award you the money.
February 11, 2010 was that tweet. So that was, I think, that, if not on the day, I don't know if Sam could fact check this, of the birth of Rob as a podcast. That was a monumental day.
Wow. Okay. Maybe there's some connection there, right? Do you think that they're sort of interwoven? There's a synergistic relationship.
Yeah. So yeah, I started doing Rob as a podcast. Erica started tweeting out that she still watched Survivor.
Right.
No, it's all
still on.
It's all coming together. And then I bought a cameo from her. February 12th, Sam says. So this was one day before Rob is a podcast got its proper start. That was when Erica was tweeting. So she must have been pumped up about the Heroes versus Villains premiere.
Okay, yeah, that timing then makes sense.
Yes. And, you know, I think it's fitting because I really feel like that her win is probably, you know, comparable in some ways to like a Sandra.
Yeah, I think increase the visibility and then, you know, decrease maybe a little bit of the starkiness. And then I think that you've got, you know, similar mold. Sort of. Okay. Would Erica burn a hat in the fire? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think she would burn.
She's Canadian.
She wouldn't burn a hat. Nice. She'd smash an hourglass, but, you know, not a.
Right.
Not a hat. Okay. Liana. Anything else, Survivor 41?
Ooh, okay. Yes, I have one thing that I want to... Well, technically two things. First of all, I believe that the theme of the season was never give up. And that's why Heather was the mascot for never giving up. And Mike mentioned this on the voicemails, and I can picture where I was when I was listening to it. He talked about how Jeff is Heather's biggest supporter.
Yes.
I was at the gym lifting weights. I literally stopped, put down the weights, and wrote this down. Mike, let me tell you why. I know we're talking tomorrow and I could easily tell you then, but instead I'm choosing to channel this message through the feedback podcast. Jeff is her biggest fan because he's the baby daddy. On the mat chat, we saw Heather say,
daddy.
Yes, Heather was like, we created a family together. Thank you for helping us create a family. And Jeff feels this familial bond, much like, you know, Fast and the Furious, like Dom. We are
Dom
family.
Dom Toretto?
Familial. Yeah. Yes, yes. And that's why he's been so in on Heather. And everything that when he's usually in immunity challenges, oh, so-and-so is so far behind, they're never going to make up. He's always like, Heather represents, Heather never stops trying. And I think it's because of this familial relationship. That is my theory.
Yeah, I would say that never give up is like not just the theme of Survivor 41. I think that that has become the adopted theme of Survivor, that it's just like, I noticed this in Winners at War. And I just think that, I don't think it's going to be any, just 41. I think it's all the seasons is the message of Survivor is never give up and never stop trying because you never know what you can accomplish. You know, all the people that, you know, have applied to the show and they kept applying, or if you ever thought you couldn't do something and then you did it, like that's what the whole message of the show is. And I do like that sort of like Jeff is sort of looks at this as is like the Dom Toretto of like you know, survive that's the message of Fast and the Furious of like, hey, let's bring together all these people from different mm-hmm. backgrounds with different skill sets and different talents. And we're going to be like, bring them together for one last ride. And that's like what Survivor is every season.
Yeah. And we got it with Deshaun, with the fire making, never giving up, you know, that's the narrative with Heather. When we learned in the finale that she, what, hadn't been in the water for 35 years or something, cause she almost drowned. And then she jumped in the water and grew another inch, which that I didn't quite understand. Like, is it the Grinch? Like your heart grew through three sizes that mm-hmm. day. And I like, don't mm-hmm. quite understand that, but still. Yeah, exactly. It's that whole, we as a family are conquering and we are never right. giving up and we are doing this together.
And it's just like Danny said, I live my life a quarter of a season at a time.
Quarter of a game at a time, yes. Even though there's only three quarters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, no, that's a great take. So, I hope the message gets received mm-hmm. By Mixmaster Mike, and can't wait Find to out. Hear what you and Mike and Chappelle have up your sleeves for the B&B.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it's going to be a fun one. We're going to get into all the silliness, even though, you know, Rob, you and I got to cover so many wonderful things talking here today. The silliness, the, you know, potatoes have skin and I have skin, so I am a potato version.
Yes.
Will be on the B&B.
I was going to pull the clip from Survivor 42. And I'm like, no, I can't cannibalize the season 42 podcast. Like, I'm going to need to talk about that so much in March that I can't. That I don't want to step on it here in December.
Okay, I won't go too far, but I you know, look, season
What's
41
with the food
was super
items?
Fun.
Stew.
Yeah.
This is all stew.
Stew is in potatoes. Stew is the one writing the clues. Mm-hmm. I didn't see. I think you could probably go back and take a still because it has all three clues listed, so you yeah. can maybe see what the other ones are going to be. But you know, we will get
Stew,
to 42.
Who wrote two clues? Also made a pizza. Had one of the most memorable meals. For the Survivor crew, dismantled the previous reputation of pizza. Only got a single mention. The Matrix is real.
Yeah, and it's in good order, whatever.
And he's taking orders.
Ding ding. I'm excited. The season was really great, and I think, you know, drop the mm-hmm. four, keep the two, or
yes,
as Puyi and I were talking about, you could keep the four and add the zero, because I think that fits a lot of the clues that we're hearing.
Keep the four, so, add the zero, like what you're drinking a 40.
No, keep the four, add the zero, so you know, like Aussies style of Survivor.
Oh, okay. 420.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, okay. Yes. I know that. Well, now it's gonna be like, all right, keep the four, drop the one, add the two. It's Survivor 42.
let's go.
Or
keep, yeah, I don't know how they
keep
do that.
The four, keep the one, add another one, and you got 42.
Or it's in binary. That's mm-hmm. three. I guess that'd be 1-0. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Liana, really what else is coming up? Mass Singer, did that wrap up this week too?
Yes. So the Masked Singer finale was the same night as the Survivor finale, but don't worry, Puya and I have already recorded that podcast. So hopefully it's submitted. So hopefully it should be out soon. And we had a really good time. It was a 2-hour finale. I think maybe a slightly less exciting than Survivor, but still a really good time. And we got a fabulous winner of the season that I think if we look at the winner's edit for Masked Singer, I think that was explained and well-defined why okay. the winner won the season.
Okay. And I'm very fortunate that I have gotten to come back to the 90 Day Fiance podcast to get the podcast myself with Puya once again. We had so much fun on Monday talking about the premiere of 90 Day Fiance before the 90 days.
Yes, that was a super fun podcast to listen to. I'm really excited that you're back with Puya to talk about all of the shenanigans, because some of these couples... Gino, I have no other words, mm-hmm. just Gino.
Yes.
Like maybe if Stu could help Gino with some of his culinary decisions, yes. then
a true social kick, Gino.
Really, a real social kick. So many blind sides. Yes. In his
Stu
belt.
Could come in and really fix up Gino's freezer.
All those Hungry Man meals. He could really just transform and make something.
Xander
very
candy. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Okay. And then Liana, anything else coming up for you?
RuPaul's Drag Race will be back
oh.
on the 7th. So I'm talking, Aman, Beth and I are going to talk this weekend to sort of plan out the season. And I think we're going to do a preview. So that'll be coming out at some point. So keep an eye on Twitter. Keep your eye on the streets. We'll be back previewing. It is a regular season. So we get all new queens. And so far from what I've seen, it seems to be pretty interesting. Maybe some twists there as well. We'll see how much that interferes with the format, but I think it's going to be interesting. I really can't wait.
Okay. Well, looking forward to the return of the Drag Race wrap up. I've got a busy podcast weekend. We're going to be doing Patron Mafia coming up on Saturday. Of course, Puya is a big part of that as well. I've got Robin Akiva need a podcast. We're going to be signing up for some different, job openings on Fiverr. We're not doing the jobs. I guess we're going to be buying different services on Fiverr this weekend. The Fiverr Goes West is what we're calling this one on Robin Akiva Need a Podcast. Then we're going to be doing some holiday movie watching with the aforementioned Chappelle on Nothing But Netflix. Kirsten McInnes is going to join us to watch The Princess Switch 3.
Oh, wow. That
I think
really...
I'm just going to jump right into Princess Switch 3. I'm not going to watch Princess Switch 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, you know, I'm just like, if you missed the first couple of Matrix movies, I don't know if you would understand the third one. If you missed the first.
Oh, I watched Switch the Matrix movies. 1 and 2 and didn't understand the third Matrix one. I said, okay. That's it. I'm done. Yeah. I was done with the franchise after that. It was so bad.
Well, hopefully Princess Switch 3 will be able to do it for you. Yes. Won't have such a negative reaction.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have all that. And then 90 Day Fiancé. Plus, don't forget the Wand Off is coming up on Tuesday. I'll do patron orientation on Monday night. So lots of great stuff coming your way. Thanks for everybody who listened to the podcast all season long on Survivor 41. We got to have so much fun. Can't wait to do it again in Survivor 42. Plus, Amazing Race is coming back. Liana, Celebrity Big Brother, one of our favorites, is going to be back in February. So a lot to do. Glad to have you on board. If you're checking out for a little bit, can't wait to see you back in the spring for Survivor 42. But don't be gone for too long. I think we're going to have some more interviews coming your way and much more at robiswebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and it's hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too. You're busy enough. Go to geico.com and get a quote and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.